Okay, Mara, can you please determine a quorum?
Cheryl Henry?
Here.
Jay Lister?
Here.
Cheryl Pyle?
Here.
Jay Holman?
Here.
Meg Lister?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Okay. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. All right, we'll have a motion to approve the agenda. Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Are there any changes or discussion?
Do we need, this is Cheryl, do we need to add about committees, to add people to the committees? Because we have nobody on negotiations. I was going to email Mara, but I was like, how do I word that? So I just waited.
I think it's more, we don't have to vote on those. It's just more of an agreement. But yeah, that's a good one. We get down to that committee, maybe the committee reports. We can have a discussion on who's doing what. Okay.
That's good.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, motion's been made and seconded by Cheryl to approve the agenda as written for January 12th, 2021. Mara, can you please call the roll?
Yes. Meg Lister?
Yes.
Kate Holman?
Yes.
Jay Lister?
Yes.
Cheryl Holmgren?
Yes.
Cheryl Pyle?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Next, we'll move on to correspondence. I believe we have one letter. Correct, from the Association of Teachers of Petersburg. Dated December 14th, Dear President Holmgren and Superintendent Clint Painter, the Association of Teachers of Petersburg is requesting to open negotiations with the Petersburg School Board in January 2021. Thank you for your consideration. So we received that after our last board meeting, so this is where we're bringing it forward, and we'll begin kind of organize, I guess. Do we have any other details that we want to go over for that? Probably not. Besides that, we'll figure out who's going to be the negotiator, and then we'll just start figuring out times to meet.
Yeah, I think
okay.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yep, something we do every 3 years. Usually the contracts are 3 years long, and so we're just in that process again. Mm-hmm. Okay, any other correspondence?
Not to be read into the record.
Okay.
You received some through your email, but those were not asked to be read into the record.
Okay. So. Okay. Comments from the audience unrelated to agenda items?
I don't have anyone signed up for either comment.
Okay, or comments related to agenda items. Okay, then we'll move on to comments from board members. Anybody? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to the consent agenda, which includes the monthly accounting reports, bills, payrolls, electronic fund transfers, trial balance, and P-card statements. Our regular board meeting minutes from December as well. I'll make a motion to approve it as presented. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Motion's been made and seconded by Cheryl. Any discussion? Okay. Hearing none. Mark, can you please call the roll?
Jay Lister?
Yes.
Sarah Holmgren?
Yes.
Meg Lister?
Yes.
Katie Holman?
Yes.
Cheryl Pyle?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Next, we'll move on to Section 10, Administrative Reports, and we'll start with the Superintendent's Report, Superintendent Container. Take it away, Erica.
All right, great. Well, good evening, everybody. So we are back. We came back with a flourish from Christmas vacation and started up with some really great in-service on Monday morning on January 4th. We were able to participate in our first training with the grant that I talked a little bit about in December with CIRC and Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, through the cultural lens, which is a culturally responsive teaching grant. And so we had a training for all of our teachers on Monday morning, first training, 2.5 hours. It was really very well received, and we're looking forward to the next couple of those trainings for teachers. And then our leadership team that I talked a little bit about, which is both principals, myself, and then a teacher from each building, will be participating in a pretty substantial amount of training each month, starting next week, actually, 6 hours a month of training straight through to become train the trainer model. So we will become trainers in this culturally responsive teaching practices model. And so we're really looking forward to that. We've got our team. We've got, we're starting, I think, on Wednesday. So we're looking forward to that grant and that training. And then we started to see cases. And so then we had to shift gears from professional development for a bit and then into some meetings with EOC and our medical crew and just trying to get a handle on that. And then recognizing that there were a few more popping up and a lot of tests that were still out there. So yes, so we made the decision to go remote for the first 3 days of the getting back to school after Christmas. And we pivoted pretty quickly on that. And I think it was pretty darn successful. So we've got a pretty good system for that now. Always more challenging for our youngest students, but I think some of them were pretty happy to still be in their jammies for a few more days and doing some activities that the teachers worked through. We also got the technology back out at that time to our elementary kids. Our middle and high school kids already have theirs. But so that, you know, we were able to accomplish that, which I think was also helpful. And then we did move back into a green schedule this week. A little rocky last night and today with some of the cases coming, but they are in one place. So I just keep kind of checking in with our team here and saying, okay, where are we? And feeling at this point, you know, so comfortable with where the contacts are and that people are doing what they need to be doing if, you know, when cases are found in the family and quarantining and doing what they're doing. And if that happens, then we're able to keep, you know, keep going. So at this point, but the roller coaster, you never know. Every day I wake up and say, I don't know what this day is going to be. So that's where we are. But I really appreciate everybody's flexibility in that last week. Teachers, staff, kids, you know, everybody just kind of pivoted and we just moved into it and it went really well. So happy to have kids back this week. And everybody else has got more information of details. Jamie's got things to talk about with activities and both Heather and Rick do as well. So I won't spend any more on that. Gearing up, legislative session starts next week. We do have our superintendent group and actually just the administrative group in the state is meeting every Friday virtually just to start, you know, kind of gearing up for that and what that might look like moving forward, which, you know, again, is roller coaster. Who knows where that's going to go. So they kind of get back up and going next week, but we've already started some work in that. Reads Act and the preschool conversation is still moving forward. So we are, we will probably be posting soon for a preschool position here in the district. So as we talk, you know, we kind of paused on all that last winter. Mm-hmm. So we're literally a year later back to the conversation. So yeah, and so we'll probably be looking, and we are looking at that, at staffing, posting some positions here even this month, looking at some of our special ed needs and special ed positions, some of our harder to fill positions, and then just trying to project what the future might look like as far as what protocols have to continue to be in place with COVID, what staffing might look like, and then what funding we're going to receive federally through the state and how that's looking. So we're getting lots of information about that right now too. What else is happening? We PMC came up and we did testing. We offered testing to our staff, any staff members that were interested Friday morning. We did that right out front of the high school and it was very slick and we really appreciate PMC coming up and just doing that for us right here on site. It was quick and easy and people are able to check their portal and find out what their results are. So we appreciate that. We're going to keep doing that every other Friday for staff out front. And we are on the list for being in the next tier with vaccinations. There's a clinic for 65 and up happening this Thursday in the community gym. And then hopefully in the next couple of weeks, kind of depends on supply and when they get the shots here and how that works. But we're moving up the list a little bit. So we do have a lot of people who are interested in receiving the vaccination when it comes. And then I did send out, we've sent out feedback surveys on admin. Looking forward to next Tuesday for my exec meeting with you guys. And then we'll get information for you on both of our principals.
Yeah, that's the 19th at 6.
Yeah. Any questions for me?
Where's that meeting at?
We can
reserve
do it.
The library, yeah. If you guys would like to be in person and spread out.
This library or the
public?
Yeah.
The library.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Which is fine.
This seems to work.
Yeah, that works.
Still private enough.
Sounds good.
I have any questions. Okay. Anybody else? No? Okay, we'll move on. So we have elementary principal report, Principal Heather Kahn. She's not here, but we did get a written report from her.
And she's
online.
Oh, she's on. Okay.
She's right there.
I didn't know she had a conflict. Okay. Oh, Heather.
Okay. My report, I wasn't going to read it because I had just sent it to you guys, but I just wanted to put a few additional comments in there. It's just a pretty big shout out to Ethan Briner, who is now a substitute in the school district. He just graduated from Idaho and has his teaching certificate. So I just wanted to give a shout out that we are in need of substitutes and he has come running for us. So thank you to Ethan. Mrs. Evans, just a shout out there, coming over and taking the PE position here at the elementary school. And then Mrs. Pop, she has been the swim instructional coach, and Miss Marifern, swim teacher. Swim classes started yesterday. Kids were bubbling about the swim classes. And I think teachers as well. It was just a much needed breath of fresh air. We do have a RTI conference that's coming up, and I wanted just to let everybody know the weekend of January 22nd. Teachers are going to be working that weekend to do an RTI conference. And then we have our MAP growth and fluency testing coming up mid-February. And of course, conferences are right around the corner from there on March 3rd and 4th. But that's just additional information I wanted to add. Thank you.
Anybody have any questions for Ms. Kahn? I'm kind of curious, maybe this is just for the SPED numbers, we're looking at just pre-K to five. We have 47 students with only two staff members for Ms. Marifern, the other Ms. Marifern, Ms. Cabral. What are we looking, if those numbers were still maintained, you know, that there wasn't a change in them, or how many staff members would ideally be?
At least one more special ed position is going to be posted. That's one of the ones we're talking about too. And if we make a move on that preschool, it might be a preschool combination with some preschool and even maybe kindergarten SPED. So it might be a movement within the district and then another posting of a special ed, which we had talked about last year. Actually, about this time.
I was curious if it was more. Yep. This was even more.
It's a need still.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
Quick question. So is that the 47 throughout the district?
That's K-5. And that's speech. That's some speech only IEPs in addition to other regular IEPs. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if I can interject really quick into that, can you guys hear me? Okay. I didn't put this down because we haven't yet qualified these students, but there are five more that are being qualified this month.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How many kids do we have in the whole school? That seems like a lot. And I know you said some might just be speech, not all academic.
Yeah, it's the whole gamut.
Yeah,
them, but yeah,
but still, that seems like a high. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it is. I can't remember what previous years have looked like, but.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely.
Okay. Thank you, Mrs. Kahn. Next, we'll all move on to middle school, high school principals report, Mrs. Principal Dormer.
Good evening. No student performance report this week or this month, just because we've just got back from a nice long break, but we'll keep those going for the upcoming board meetings. That's okay. I did include the student survey follow-up results to the support, the learning supports. We did one in early November and this one at the tail end of December, I believe on the 18th. Just we're getting ready for break. So just a couple high points in there. Hopefully you all had time to look. I just compared some of the graphs together so you can see the first and the second one in the board report. Some interesting thing there from report though, that students said they would like an increased interest in career planning. Big 70% of kids said was really important, which is pretty cool. We actually just had a good discussion with our middle school staff about post-secondary planning for middle school students. So this is certainly you know, something to kind of keep building on. We do obviously do career planning, but that's something I think kids are always wanting to hear more about. And there's a lot of stuff out there. So Ms. Turner and I have been talking about that quite a bit. Something that almost all students now know that they have help after school available from teachers, which is up from when we originally didn't. There is, fortunately, a small increase in students that say, yes, we know it's there, but I'm not taking advantage of it. But at least one of our main goals is to make sure all kids know that, you know, there's teachers available for support when they need it. So that is an improvement there. Students would like more access to organized study groups, and that was interesting. We had, that was a big one before. About 40% of our students responded they'd like more help kind of getting organized study groups so it isn't just kind of finding study needs on their own. So that was something else in there. And then finally, I saw an increase in students preferring fewer classes, and we're getting ready this Thursday. It'll be the first of many when we meet with our teachers to start talking about scheduling plannings for hopefully a fairly going back to kind of a different, the original schedule, I guess, and the one we had this year for the pandemic. So we'll start planning for that. We don't, of course, know what the future holds. But that'll start this Thursday. And one of those big questions is how many classes. We are finding, we know that there's some issues there with the length, and I don't think kids love the condensed, or teachers even love a condensed class, but they are enjoying, we're hearing more and more and more, they like just having four classes. So the survey asked, you know, do you like four, do you like seven? There were a few kids that said, you know, four may be too few, but seven may be too many. Interestingly, when we were planning before everything hit, six classes was kind of a number that our staff was looking very seriously at, down from seven, which we've had for years and years and years. So interesting to see that. And then the survey shows that there are students that prefer fewer classes. So it's just data for us. It doesn't mean we're sticking with the same schedule. I'm not saying that. We don't know if we'll go back to seven, but it is some of the conversation we're starting this week with staff. So, and all certified staff in middle school and high school invited to be part of that process. We'll start talking about it already. Speaking of teaching, too, and boy, we were just talking to the middle school staff. It's so obviously great to have our kids back in person. We're obviously thankful for the safety precautions we took last week going into Red, but great to have kids back in the building, and great to have our activities going up. You know, we're all talking about our activities still being in yellow, but we're sure thankful that it's safe here for our kids and that they're, we got them back in person. And we did want to kind of put a note out there to the board and to parents, if you're listening. We are in secondary schools, we're very aware that there's a lot of screen time for kids in Red. And we've looked at this early on in November, even as a staff, and the idea of having a special kind of Red schedule, maybe similar to what we had in the spring of last school year. It's on there. We're aware of it. Teachers are aware of it when we go. And again, be awesome if we don't have to go to Red again, but we all know that's probably possible. We could jump into Red for a little bit. And so we're aware of that. If we ever have, unfortunately, a spot where we could be in Red for a long time, teachers have agreed we would sit down and work out a shorter kind of schedule. What we're doing now is a lot of teachers are aware that it's a lot of screen time, and they'll, you know, get kids started and tell them, hey, you know, log off, work on that a little bit, let's check in, especially for those long classes that are 85 minutes. So parents were aware, you know, board were aware, and teachers are kind of mitigating it within their own classes because they know they're long days. But at the same time, you know, going to Red and then back to another, there is some confusion and weirdness in checking the schedules, and kids are home, and parents, you know what my new schedule is when I'm online. So we're trying to keep that consistency among schedules, but a lot of screen time. So teachers are aware more. Working with it. Finally, we are less than 2 weeks away from the end of quarter two and semester one. So almost, we're already pretty close to the halfway point, knowing we went a little bit longer with semester one, but we're closing out here on January 22nd, and then we'll be starting to go on the 25th with quarter three and semester two. So the big changes happen. It's weird. Actually, springs are going fast, as hot as it's been. That's my report. Fairly short tonight, but any questions, or do y'all see anything on the survey you had some questions about? Some of those big bar graphs and pie charts.
Thought the career planning thing was interesting.
You mentioned yes, I guess today. I mentioned it during the radio, so I guess if people didn't have a chance to listen to the radio today, but it was just kind of interesting to see that big, you know, it's pretty decent, you know, they went from, I guess they were, what, 58% to 70%. It's a pretty big jump, and I kind of took away is maybe when the school started and they took the first one on the social emotional counseling, there was 31% that wanted, we found that to be quite helpful, as well as anxiety support groups at 29%. And that dropped with the December survey down to social emotional counseling down to 24%. So it went from 31 to 24, and then anxiety support group going down to 21 from 29%. So, I mean, it's not a huge drop, but it was just kind of, to me, it was interesting that I thought, you know, these kids were probably pretty stressed to start school at the beginning of the year, and we're still figuring things out, especially having not really been out of it since, you know, even though they did school March, April, and May, it was still just so different. So I was glad to see at least their needs are changing, and maybe in a in a positive way of like, okay, now let's talk about career planning, that I've got this whole figured out and I feel like we're as normal as we can be at the moment. So I don't know. I thought it was encouraging, but also good feedback.
Yeah, it's cool. I'm glad we did both surveys. And I wonder too, Superintendent, it'd be interesting to sometimes have Ms. Turner come in and kind of talk about what we do. We've certainly grown in career planning. We all, as a school, and certainly Ms. Turner, as I've been talking, there's farther we want to go, bigger steps as far as getting, maybe even making parents, I think they know that they're being walked this process, but I don't know if they know how specific it is. So that'd be cool for
them. I think that'd be great.
Someday.
Yeah, I think it'd be great.
And we got a lot going on now, but. I bet that was Ms. Turner texting me. What did you just say?
What did you say?
Yeah, what are you really doing?
Any other questions for me?
Oh, I love it.
Anybody else? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Norma. Let me get back to my agenda. All right. Now, Director of Activities Report, Mr. Cabral.
All right, we are rolling. We're back. Our winter activities have begun. We are operating currently in a yellow level, back from break, but also just to get our kids used to what a yellow level looks like if we ever need to float back and forth, so it's not a massive change. So what the yellow level basically means is we have a limit on the amount at one time at a practice. So we've got 12 and 2, which is pretty much a roster. A legal roster for a varsity level. So right now it works out perfect. Our girls basketball is operating, boys basketball operating in two different pods, and our cheer is going to be starting here soon once we get some more of our kids in there. And so that is our winter activities for the high school. We also have a meeting tomorrow with our esports programs, and a little bit down there under bullet 4, esports is evolving. It is official. Madden and FIFA and Rocket League and League of Legends is coming. We are running. We're going to see what our interest level is on a lot of those activities. The season starts in February, but we need to register our teams by the 19th of January. So it's coming quick. So we will see what we get there. And we're excited. We're excited for a lot more esports possibilities because they're talking and they know that it's coming. So really looking forward to that one. Our middle school, we finished up cornhole with our championships. It was fantastic. It was so awesome. And hope you got to watch some Johnsonville-sponsored cornhole over the break on ESPN, because we sure did.
That was
hilarious. It was great.
Who knew we were
looking? Yeah.
Who was the champion of cornhole?
Okay. Champion of the cornhole. Champion of cornhole for singles was Alex Holmgren. In a battle, and he fought back through the loser's bracket through the double elimination. And then the doubles championship featured Nolan and Tyler against Noah and Aiden Knudsen. And Noah and Aiden squeaked it out at the end. It was close. It was close. But it was awesome. We did it in the gym in front of everyone. We streamed it, and it was great. First time we streamed it, but it was kind of cool. And they were cornholing. They were getting three-pointers back and forth, and it's that subtraction style, so they had to do a lot of math, which the math teachers really liked, because the staff tried to do some of the math, and sometimes it took them about 4 minutes to decipher what was the subtraction on some of the games that we played.
I don't know.
So it was good. It was good, and they played the full 27 feet, so they went the full official length. We didn't do the junior level. They wanted to go pro.
Of course.
So it was good. But for middle school, we're going to be starting Native Youth Olympics for the next 2 months. And we're going to try and throw in esports. I just did a play versus who kind of runs esports throughout the state. Their middle school age group changed this year, and they just put that out. So there's a 13-year-old maximum with the middle school league. And the only two activities they offer with the junior level is two sports that we don't sponsor in this state, which is fine. So we will try and modify our esports to make it with our councils that we have here. Rocket League is huge, and I'm sure some of your kids know how to play Rocket League. They do not need. They could go ahead and make an Epic Sports account if they wanted to, which is fine. When you enter into a league and do a tournament level, we can kind of lock what specialties on their vehicles that they want to put on there, because some of them put a lot of nitros on their cars and all these special gadgets that they have, special wheels. It'll lock it to keep it simple to make it fair. So we're going to work into that, and we got some ideas for that one. With Native Youth Olympics, we're meeting on Thursday with our middle school kids. We're going to start next week with their practices and some of those activities that we'll be doing with them. Right now, the sixth graders are the only ones that will be competing virtually. The seventh, eighth grade is going to come at a later date, which they have not released, and it's run by the Kukulik Tribal Corporation. And the six events that we're going to participate in is the Alaskan high kick, the 2-foot high kick, the 1-foot high kick, the scissor broad jump, the kneel jump, and the seal hop. So those are the activities that we're going to be doing with our kids. It is tough, and they got to experience that with Nick Hansen, who was here last January, which was really awesome that they've already got an introduction to it. And then the elementary is exploring options because first and second grade is a category, third and fourth grade is a category, and fifth and sixth grade is a category. So our sixth graders will be competing across the state with everyone that turns in their times and their measurements and everything else. So we'll get it going. It'll be awesome. Super excited for that. And then we'll figure out when the dates are for the 7th, 8th graders, and then explore into the high school level, because high school is usually later in March for the statewide event, which is huge. It's a very, very large event. And we're excited just to have a team, because we've never been there. And Mount Edgecombe last year for the high school, so they are very, very studly. Okay, going back to my agenda. Those athletic calendar dates under bullet 5, those are all the same ones. I just left them on top of the report. That way we got all those things. Number 6 and number 7, those have all passed. I've mentioned those about the last 3 meetings, that those are all, they were coming and they are official now. The new big change that is official that we have adopted for our activities program, the Alaska School Design Activities Association and the Sports Medicine Advisory Committee was talking about a return to play for if we ever had a student test positive that's involved in activities and athletics. So with that, we do have a new COVID-19 waiver form on Planet HS for our high school kids that they all had to go and resubmit, even if they've done it earlier, which all of our kids have, which is great. And then with our return to play protocol, we are putting them through kind of similar to what a concussion protocol would look like. Basically, what they're worried about is just making sure that their heart and their lungs are operating at capacity level, getting enough oxygen when they're doing their physical activity. So it is about a 17-day wait if a kid ever tested positive. There's their 10 days before they can come back and get cleared, and then it's a 7-day return to play protocol. And I have a document that I can share with you guys what it looks like. Our medical center knows all about it. It's very, very highly recommended from the Sports Medicine Advisory Committee and all of the national training, athletic training places down south too. So this is a big one. So we've put that in place, and myself and or Mr. Dormer would put our kids through it. We will not have our coaches put our kids through it. That's on the side. We do them. And very similar to what a concussion return to play protocol looks like. So, yeah, that is it.
Well, lots of activities despite everything.
Lots. We're rolling. Yeah, it'll be good. Can't wait for orienteering. Especially in the wind. Hopefully it never blows 50 miles an hour when we're doing orienteering. Like today is crazy.
Anybody have any questions?
This is Meg. I have a quick question.
Ready.
So this maybe is silly or I should already know the answer, but for the Alaska Native Youth Olympic sports that you're working on, can any participate, or do they need to be Alaska Native?
They do not need to be Alaska Native. They can be any student, open to all of our students. And on the middle school bulletin, there's a little link on there that kind of explains it all. If they were doing World Eskimo Indian Olympics, they would have to. But for Native Youth Olympics through Cook Inlet, you do not have to be Native in order to participate. Everyone is welcome to participate. And this year, there is no fee for the to enter into the state event. It is all free.
Wow.
So it is awesome. So if we had every kid in the middle school participate, awesome. Everybody could. Just in those events, they won't be entering into kind of like the stick pull event, just because of how close contact we would have our kids. So we won't have them in the stick pull or the partner carry, which requires someone to hold onto the stick while they go around a little loop as many times as they can without falling off the stick. we won't be doing that one.
Thanks, Jamie.
Yeah, anybody in the middle school, it's all good. Same with the high school. Once we get the high school dates and start date, anybody in the high school could participate. And we are meddling, the Cook Inlet Tribal Council is meddling first, second, and third in every event, every category, both male and female categories. So there are medals to be won.
Awesome. Great, thank you, Mr. Paul. Hey. My agenda. Mm-hmm. Oh, Director of Facilities and Maintenance Report, Mr. Johnston.
Good evening, board members. Superintendent Painter. So the lights are on, the water's running, and the heat's on. That's all important, right?
Important.
Important stuff.
Huh? Most of the rainwater is outside the building. Over the Christmas break, some of the major projects that we took on was the renovation of the mat room. I know Sarah got Steve a mat room. It's about 85% complete. So at the end of the break, we had to revert back to normal maintenance. So kind of time got kind of constrained to where we're not able to spend as much time up there as we want to, but we will have the mat room finished for wrestling. We did the backboard lights in the basketball court, so the backboards now illuminate at the end of each period.
Oh,
so thank you to Darby and Jamie, spent hours on the telephone with NEPCO trying to get these all these things talking to each other while I put the light on board. So through the CARES Act funding, the borough bought a hyperfluorous acid generator for us. So we received that like the 28th or 29th of January or December. It is assembled in the elementary boiler room. It is just not running yet. So it was very expensive, and I want to make sure that everything is 100% before I turn it on, so I don't want to break it. I think the last board meeting, we were converting everything to touchless. So the elementary school is all touchless now, and all the restrooms,
nice.
Or all the school student restrooms are all touchless. And we're working on the high school, middle school. And also we ordered backboards and rims for the covered play area out here. And those are being shipped. And when they get here, we'll install those. And I think that's pretty much it. So, yeah.
What was that thing you called the Buster the CARES Act funding?
So it's a hyperfluorous acid generator. We could talk offline, but it's a disinfectant that's natural. It's totally non-toxic. So it will get us, it will eliminate our dependency on chemicals for disinfecting. We can put it in our ray guns and spray it throughout the rooms. And it's non-toxic, and it's supposedly 30 times more effective than bleach.
Wow.
And it's it is EPA rated. So.
It's those cure tabs we talked about too, that if you remember, that could be used in the spray bottles and in those ray guns, but you can produce it. So Anchorage School District had bought one last fall, and that's what we were talking about. It like, well, we don't need one that, but, you know, and it'll produce a lot. So we had talked with the borough about that. Like maybe if we had one, we could produce, the hospital could use it. I mean,
So the one that we have is capable of producing 144 gallons a day. And then once you dilute it down to the right pH level, like 250 gallons of actual disinfectant to go on the guns. But it's totally non-toxic. It's just salt, vinegar, electricity, and water. It goes through the chemical change through this machine, and it becomes a disinfectant.
Wow.
Once we get up and running, we'll test the next board meeting.
Yeah.
I'll bring you a bottle to fill.
Love it.
Yeah.
Right. Bring your spray bottle to the next meeting. We'll send you home with it.
Hey, that might fund some programs in school they're filling in the community.
I love it.
Thank you.
You're
any other questions or comments? All right. Now we'll move on to school board committee reports, section 11, or curriculum. Oh, crisis, excuse me. Show probably haven't met at all. I think we've all kind of taken a little bit of a backseat.
That's what we do is crisis. No.
Yeah. It's a constant. Curriculum, Katie.
Well, I know we're talking about some tonight, but I don't think we've actually had a meeting yet, or I haven't been clued into them, so I don't think we've met.
Mr. Dormer is shaking his head no.
Okay, good. I'm glad I haven't missed anything.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's probably pretty quiet from December to January anyway.
Yeah, so as it should be. There's other things to do.
Facilities. No, nothing, Jay? Okay. Legislative liaison. I don't think we have one. No one has wanted to step up and do. We miss you, Mara.
She's watching it every day.
I know. She keeps us in the loop. Negotiations. We have, those have been officially requested, and unless someone has a strong opinion, I know Cheryl has done it in the past and she was agreeable to doing it. If anybody else has a strong opinion about being on the negotiating team, we usually have two people that work with Erica. So, am I going to hear crickets?
Yep. Think about it, I guess.
Okay, so at this point, I think Cheryl and I will do it unless someone feels really strongly about wanting to. You don't even have to feel strongly about it if you want to do it.
We have a good time.
We happily.
It's not hard.
We have a good time.
Not bad.
I think Jay's done it before.
Yeah.
Did it last time?
Yeah.
Was that hard?
It was two times.
Or two times.
I don't know.
Yeah, anyway.
Seems like we've all kind of taken a spot.
Yeah.
Seat, but at least once.
I'll be.
Policy, we still haven't met.
No. But
we
Mara,
all have a lot of
I did sit
to
through
begin
a six-hour conversation. That was one of the things on it was that policy, that one policy that we've talked about that we're still waiting to hear about the training, the one about the professional boundaries.
That we started to work on.
And they
and
still
then
have not really come out with that final training. It has to do with insurance and everything, too. So anyway.
Oh, okay.
We'll see. Yeah.
I almost feel like unless there's some burning one, like that we just.
Yeah.
It's okay to wait.
Yeah.
We're not behind. So okay. Technology, Jay. Probably not.
Nothing new.
Okay. And wellness, Katie.
Not that I know of.
Okay. Yeah, I figured it was probably pretty quiet. Okay. Next we'll go on to special recognition. Karen Morrison, our wonderful financial director, has been selected as the Alaska Business Officials as their 2021 Business Official of the Year. It's a pretty big deal, and we are feel honored on her behalf that she was awarded this, and it's definitely earned. She worked hard. I don't know if you have anything else you want
to. Well, I think I mentioned it today that Angela had asked that question. I thought it was a good one, just, you know, what does it sort of mean and all that. And I think I think it is important to recognize that not only are we so appreciative and grateful for the work that she does within our own district and very fortunate to have her, but she is highly respected around the state, and not just this award clearly is a demonstration of that, but I know that from other committee work that I'm involved with at the state level, and she has been the president of their organization, the Business Officials Organization, this past year, and highly respected around the state. So just, you know, she'll be embarrassed, and she's already shut off her screen up there, but it's the truth. So just
well, it's the equivalent of for others, like Teacher of the Year, Superintendent of the Year, Principal of the Year. Yeah,
it's a big deal and just well deserved. So she's highly respected around the state as well as being ours. You know, people want to talk to me about her. I'm like, no, you can't have her.
So, staying here.
Exactly.
Okay. We'll move on. No old business. So we'll move on to new business. 14. One is the personnel, 14.1 is the personnel action report will be housed in the consent agenda and will be voted on as a bulk acceptance. If a board member would like to discuss an item on the personnel report, they would make a motion to remove the report from the consent agenda and create a new item under new business during the approval of the agenda. We thought about moving that into the consent agenda because most of the time it is kind of just the hire has happened and it's more of us just being the final approval. So I will first make a motion to approve the personnel action report being put into the consent agenda for voting on personnel actions in the district. If I could have a second and then we can have a discussion.
Second.
I'll second
Cheryl. Oh, okay. Motion's been made and seconded by Cheryl. Sorry. And now we can have a discussion. Hopefully that made sense when I read the little. It's just streamlining some of the standard operating procedures that we vote on pretty much every meeting.
This is Meg. I'm just don't get to be there with you guys. Sorry, but I'm a big fan of like really consistent formatted forms. So I like it. It makes sense, easy to read, and to have the consistency you know, looking back at any meeting, you could have that record easy to read. Seems good.
Yeah, I thought it was helpful just kind of breaking it down by, even when we move on to the next one, the personnel action report, where you broke it down for, Mara did for us for the new hires.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is, so I'll speak because I brought this, I brought this item forward.
Okay, Mara Latonsky speaking for those who are listening.
Yes. So I have seen several other districts do some fashion of this for their hiring. Now, granted, some districts are very large, and so they have to bulk accept quite a few new hires at one time. But I thought that it was a good idea to have it all in one place, all where you can see any resignations that are happening and the different classifications of where they are, and then at the bottom, just kind of a screenshot of, you know, who and what numbers we have. So this will replace those individual voting action items when we have a new hire within the district, where, you know, that is a its whole item, where then you have to vote individually, where we might have five during the night. First, now we can just have it all in one sheet. You can accept all at once, or if you have a problem with one of the new hires, then you can make that change that Sarah read about the example. You can remove it from the consent agenda, make it a new business item, and then you can have, you know, your discussion about the discussion about the new hire, if you so choose, or if you want to.
Or retirement, or do not, no.
Yeah. So, you can't retire. So it was just kind of a way to condense. We don't generally spend a long time talking about new hires. It's quite uncommon for the board to even deny a new hire. So my suggestion, you can vote it or not.
All right, motions been made and seconded. Any other discussion? Okay, hearing none. Mara, can you please call the roll?
Meg Lichter?
Yes.
Katie Holmland?
Yes.
Sarah Holmgren?
Yes.
Cheryl File?
Yes.
Jay Lichter?
Yes.
Okay, motion passed 5-0. Now we'll move on to an actual personnel action report, 14.2. I'll make a motion to approve the personnel action report dated January 12th, 2021, as reported. Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded by Cheryl. And have any discussion? It's quite lovely. We just, for those that are listening and don't see it, we've got our new hire at the top for a certified personnel. We don't have any resignation or retirement. We have a couple new hires in the classified personnel. And we did have a resignation in the classified personnel, which I think was expected. It just was a short-term hire.
The CARES Act funding.
Yeah, and then our extra duty contracts for the upcoming sports. And so just for the listening public, if you're curious, we have 44 teachers, 34 classified staff, 2 principals, and 5 district employees with a total of 85 for the district. So any discussion? Okay, motion's been made and seconded to approve the personnel action report dated January 12th, 2021. Mara, please call the roll.
Jay Lister?
Yes.
Cheryl File?
Yes.
Katie Holmland?
I think I need to abstain due to past work relationship with one of the people on this. I don't know that it would necessarily be appropriate for me to vote on it.
Yes. Yep. Motion passes 4 with 1 abstaining. We'll move on to 14.3, which is House Bill 156, sex education requirements. Each year we have to approve it, and I believe it's the exact same curriculum we had last year, but I'll make a motion to approve the curriculum and resources and teaching staff as presented, which we'll have that presentation shortly. Could I have a second so that we can do that?
Second.
Okay. Jay's motion has been made and seconded by Jay. House Bill 156 requires that instructors and the curriculum, literature and material for the course must be approved each year. Principals Rick Dormer and Heather Kahn will present any updates to the curriculum over last year, who the presenters might be, and then we'll answer any questions that we have. So now we are open for that. I don't know who wants to start or who's.
I actually don't know. I would let Heather start. I don't know what she has up there. So go ahead, Heather.
Heather doesn't really have anything to present.
I would concur with what Mara had said.
Okay. All right. Take it away, Mr. Dormer, then.
Well, and you were exactly right. There are no major changes. The great Mr. Van Swingen has obviously moved on, and Mrs. Combs is taking over as our health teacher, which we're really excited for. She's a great educator, a life science educator, and it's been a passion of hers, so she is going to teach it. These are the same slices that you've approved in years past. That is the same letter to parents, except it has her name on it and, you know, dates and that type of stuff. The health contract is the same one that we sent home, so it gives parents a look at all the units that are taught and a chance to say, you know, this one here on maybe STIs, I don't want them part of, but they can do the rest. And parents are offered an alternative, excuse me, students are offered an alternative assignment that obviously is not quite so in depth in that area. So we're working really hard. Ms. Combs has been working really hard to get Erin, our public health nurse, involved. And she's very passionate about it and really wants to do it. She's kind of busy this year. So she's still really holding out hope she'll be able to present. At a minimum, of course, we believe that she is such a wonderful resource for our community that she will at least be able to kind of pop in via Ring Central, and so the kids will know who she is, what she does, how her service is available to students. At a minimum, that will happen. We're still really hopeful she'll be able to present these. So they're her slideshows she's kind of worked with. You can see the presentations there. And again, we're not going to go through all of the very long, a detailed presentation, but again, covering sexually transmitted diseases, obviously birth control, the continued bottom line of the health education at the high school is that the by far the best way to completely prevent unwanted pregnancies or sexually transmitted diseases or infections, of course, is abstinence. So we continue to teach that, but then also recognizing that there are birth control options for students, and those are presented in there. But that is the base of a curriculum. Did you all look through anything and feel like anything was looked different or anything? And the only thing that she really did through is go through, and she felt there were a couple redundancies in some of the slideshows and deleted a little bit just to kind of keep it, but it's the same thing.
My recollection.
Yeah, I didn't see anything that was different.
Go ahead, Jay.
Would you just remind the parents how they have or how they can view this material and how they have to opt out?
Yeah. So there is a letter that will go home at least 2 weeks before the information is taught, and all freshmen receive health education this second semester. So they'll, because remember, there's a compact form. It is the end of the day. It's, I'm trying to get the times right. 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock till 2:10 is that last class. So it's a longer class. Half the students will be in PE and half will be in health. And then they'll swap in the middle of it. So they'll get PE. They don't swap in the middle. They'll be alternating back and forth. So they continue to get PE throughout that and they get health. So all freshman students take health for Mrs. Cups. The letter will go home before they get into the this information here with the sexually transmitted diseases, birth control, even the dating relationships and sex ed, you can see there, that will go home at least 2 weeks, if not farther ahead, before those topics are taught. And on the letter, it explains what they're teaching, and then there's a list of all the topics. So it gives you kind of a list, and parents can take this letter and they can initial or line out certain areas, or they can just say the whole thing and circle it, and the kids or the parents bring that back to the office. So it is an opt-out. If we don't hear from parents, this is what is taught, but the information goes home to families. And they can opt, like I said, certain sections, or can say the whole thing. And then if students do opt out, again, there's not a penalty against their grade. They have a chance to do an alternate assignment just around a health outcome, about healthy living or something that is still around, obviously, health curriculum, but it's not the specific topic like sexually transmitted disease or something like that.
Where can they view this stuff?
If they want to see the what's being presented, they would just contact the high school office, similar to like a survey or something. If they'd like to see the information on SCDs, they would contact the office. We put them in touch with Mrs. Combs, and parents would set up. You know, this current climate would be over in Central. Just talk to them. So.
And these materials are all available through your agenda.
Oh, so if someone goes on.
Those are all clickable links to the items that she gave. So you could go to the PCSD.us website, go under school board meeting materials for January 12th, and you'll be able to find it within the agenda, and you can view the PDFs and the slideshows and the letters and all of that.
Nice.
And Ernie's a nice self-presenting. If you do, again, as when you click through them, they're pretty long. If you, when you're about to come to something that says, here's a picture, it could be somewhat graphic, of course, as you're learning about human body parts. It has kind of a big warning, you know, exclamation point before you get to that second slide of the picture. So she's a professional and does a great job.
No, I do appreciate that it's even in our board packet for people out in the community, not just, you know, if they're thinking about it tonight while they're sitting at home.
Absolutely.
Great. Great. Any other comments or questions? Okay. Motion's been made and seconded to approve the curriculum and resources and teaching staff as presented. Mara, can you please call the roll?
Jill Pyle.
Yes.
B. Lister.
Yes.
Cheryl Hungry.
Yes.
Meg Lister.
Yes.
Katie Holmland.
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0. Next, we'll move on to 14.4, fiscal year 2021 budget revision.
Karen will be online.
So. Yes. Director of Finance Karen Morrison will provide a PowerPoint presentation to us for the revision and be available to answer any questions. I guess I should make a motion first because I'll make a motion for the budget revision for fiscal year 2021 as it will be presented. Could I have a second?
Is that Meg?
Second. Yeah, second.
Oh, okay. Motion's been made and seconded by Meg. Now we'll have our discussion and we'll start with the presentation.
Good evening. First off, I want to say thank you for the recognition and the kind words. It really is a privilege to work at the Petersburg School District. So thank you. I just wanted to say that. Tonight, we're presenting the fiscal year 21 winter budget revision. As you all know, this has been a very challenging year on so many levels and so many unknowns. Financially, the district is very fortunate that we've been looking at the short-term and long-term needs and have attempted to strategize as well as leverage funds to keep operations financially and fiscally sound. Go ahead, Maren, go to the first slide, please. Some of the challenges this year have included the COVID mitigation planning. We've had to prepare for both on-site as well as remote learning platforms. We've had challenges hiring teachers. There's teacher shortages in the state of Alaska and probably nationwide. We've also had challenges finding paraprofessionals, custodial, and food service staff. So there's just been a lot of unknowns this year, and therefore it's made a lot of challenges. You want to go to the next slide, please, Mara? Before I kind of get into the budget revision, I did want to talk about staffing needs because this is where most of the changes have come about. We originally had our initial budget with 41 certified teachers. This includes our regular instruction, our special education teachers, our counselor, our librarian, our special education director, our technology director, and our activities director. In this winter revision and with COVID mitigation planning, we actually currently have 48 certified teachers. This includes our 6 COVID temporary hires. And then we just had the 2 mid-year hires that you approved at tonight's board meeting for the elementary school PE and elementary SWIM. We've been able to fund these positions, especially the 6 COVID temporary hires, by leveraging funds that include the Local CARES Act funds from the borough, ESSA grant funds, and DEED CARES Act grant. There's no change to our exempt position. This includes the superintendent, principals, both principals, myself, the district admin assistant, maintenance director, and food service director. Next slide, please. Our initial budget and winter revision COVID needs included 20 classroom aides. These are our regular and our special education instructor, as well as tutoring services. We started the year out with 17, but we are currently at 20 with 3 new hires that are effective this month. We started out with 1 technology assistant, which is a normal staffing position. We added 1 part-time tech support, and we used Local CARES Act funds to support that position. No changes to our secretary, so we still have four secretaries. No changes to our accounts payable. We still have one part-time accounts payable clerk. We started the year out with six custodial and maintenance staff. We did have two temporary full-time custodians that we had through December 31st, 2020. They were paid from the Local CARES Act funds. These positions are not currently filled. The individuals who were staffing those positions have made other decisions for their life and are not currently working at the district. We'll have to just kind of address what the needs are going into January and continuing through the school year to determine if we need to hire another position, whether full-time or part-time. We started the year with four food service aides. This is not actually funded through the general fund, which I'm presenting tonight. It has its own program budget. We had one temporary part-time food service aide for October and November, and that was supported through the Local CARES Act funding as well. We're currently at four, but we have a part-time position currently posted. So hopefully we'll get that filled here in the near future. Looking at our enrollment trends, that's this next slide. This is fiscal year 2011 through our current fiscal year. And on this slide, I have our projected. We projected 470 students, and we're actually coming in at 426. We haven't seen these student enrollment numbers since 2011-2012. So this is an 8.8% decrease in our student enrollment from last year. Our student enrollment is what drives our funding from the state and much of our overall budget, since it's approximately 80% of the revenue. We are looking at $151,207 reduction in revenue from our foundation funding. Since our district's decrease in student enrollment was over 5%, the district falls into the hold harmless provision. And basically what that means is this provision is put into place to help soften the loss of revenue. So this year we're given 75% of that loss back to the district. Next year, if we fall into hold harmless again, the state provides 50% of that loss in revenue, and the following year it's 25%. So it's based on a sliding scale instead of a cliff. Mara, will you go to the next slide, please? So I have a slide here that has a lot of words and breaks all of the protocol for PowerPoint presentations, but it's easier to look at the overall budget revision. So as I stated before, our decrease in foundation funding is $151,207, but we have a small increase in E-rate funding by $7,140. So our overall decrease in this budget revision for our projected revenue is $144,670. So our projected revenue is $8,688,191. When we're looking at our expenditures, we do have an increase in our overall expenditures by $82,723. And I'll touch on the highlights of those. This really is in many ways a status quo budget, even though this is not a status quo year by any stretch of the imagination. We've had a lot of staffing shifting. This budget reflects those changes as well as trued up in this revision. So lots of changes and having to true up those salaries. There's a small increase in technology supplies and maintenance supplies. $30,000 and $36,000 reflective in those budgets. I have decreased or eliminated all staff travel with the exception of the SPED budget. There's a training in the distant future in June that we're hoping to send some of our SPED teachers to. So we'll just have to keep an eye on that. That may end up being decreased from the budget, as well as a decrease in student activity travel. For the activity seasons that have already concluded, the current and upcoming activity budgets actually remain completely intact. So I'm projecting that we should transfer $90,000 to our capital project budget. This is to fund the elementary school water heater replacement that's coming up, I believe, over spring break. Our capital fund balance as of July 1st, 2020 was $196,852. And so that's not much of a fund balance reserve. So my recommendation is that we transfer $90,000 into that capital project budget to cover the cost of that. I'm also recommending that we transfer $60,000 to pupil transportation. Our revenue from the state for pupil transportation is based on our student enrollment numbers. So initially when we were at 470, our projection for revenue for our bus contract was $194,580. But due to the fact that we are at 426 students, our projected revenue from the state is $176,360, which is quite a shortfall from our actual contract. Our contract's going to come in about $241,000. That's because we've had to add a third bus onto the afternoon route to help spread students out. So we're going to have a shortfall of about $65,000. So I am recommending that we move in $60,000. Our fund balance for pupil transportation as of July 1st, 2020 was $47,772. And we don't normally bring enough revenue in from the state of Alaska to cover our full contract cost. So we have planned for this, and we have transferred money over to the pupil transportation fund from the general fund, but it's been several years. So that would be another recommendation. Mari, you want to go to the next slide? This next slide, even though it didn't transfer so beautifully, is a summary of the projection for the different budget functions. When we talk about budget functions in school finance, they're the different departments or the different aspects in education funding. And I wanna talk briefly about our district's fund balance. Our fund balance is $1,480,756. In the spring of 2020, the governor signed a waiver that school districts could carry more than 10% of their fund balance forward from last year to this year. So we were able to carry 13.77% forward. This planning has helped with mitigating the COVID pandemic, as well as addressing student and staffing needs. As the current revision is being presented, our ending fund balance is over the 10%. And my hope is that this waiver will be extended to help our district mitigate the longer term impacts of COVID, such as pupil transportation. I'm going to provide a little summary of what the changes are in the revenue and the expenditures, and then I will entertain any questions. So there's currently no changes to the borough appropriation. We are at $1.8 million on that. Our earnings on investment is also remaining flat at $700. Unfortunately, interest rates are not very good. Other local revenues we're keeping flat at $65,000. These are our student activity fees and any classroom fees. This is reduced from previous years just because of the reduction in activities. Our E-rate program, an increase of $7,140 to a new total of $112,644. A decrease in our state foundation funding of $151,207 to a new total of $6,709,847. So the proposed overall decrease in revenue is $144,067 to the new winter budget revision revenue of $8,688,191. When we're looking at expenditures, you can see the increases and the decreases are quite minimal. So for regular instruction, that's all our classroom teachers and subject teachers at the high school and middle school, I'm proposing a decrease of $12,152 to a new expenditure total of $3,805,987. Our next one is the special education instruction. I'm proposing a decrease of $7,810 to a new total of $1,147,435. The next budget line item is support services students. This is our counselor budget, and I'm proposing a decrease of $13,102 to a new expenditure total of $308,634. Support services instruction. This is our technology and our library budgets, and I'm proposing an increase of $20,170 to a new total of $712,254. And that's to help with the tech supply budget, as I had mentioned earlier. School administration, this is our principal budgets. I'm presenting a decrease of $25,668 to a new total of $330,829. School administration support services, I'm projecting a decrease of $5,850 for a new budget total of $245,899. The district administration and the board budget, no change at $331,400. The district admin support services budget, that's my budget, I'm projecting a decrease of $12,354 for a new total of $271,212. Our operations and maintenance budget, I'm projecting an increase of $29,305 for a new budget total of $1,175,571. And our student activities, a decrease of $39,816 to a new total of $330,700. And then our other financing uses is the transfer of $150,000 to other departments. So the $90,000 to the capital funds and $60,000 to pupil transportation. Next, I'll talk actually briefly about one other part. So our expenditures do exceed our revenue in this proposed budget by $121,730. But this does include the transfers out to capital and pupil transportation. And with this revision, our ending fund balance is $1,359,028, which does exceed the 10% Alaska statute limit, but it also provides a buffer to address any changes with the spring revision and also to plan for fiscal year 22's budget. So it's a solid budget. It's conservative, and it does support the board's goals. Does anybody have any questions? You can go to the last slide, Mara.
I have a quick question. I know some of the new economic stimulus was supposed to have some funding for schools. Do we have any idea what that's going to look like?
We don't yet. Karen, you can weigh in here too. We're both getting a lot of emails. I'm getting them from Karen McCarthy in DC. That's McCarthy's aide. She sends a lot of things forward to us too that have to do with school specifically. And then the governor, there's some extensions on some of the deadlines for spending, which is good. That could be helpful for us. We're hopeful about that for staffing, supporting some of the staffing needs that are probably still going to happen, you know, at least for another year. We don't have totals on anything yet. There's still working through the process. Some of it's going to go through the state and then to us. Some's going to be going into some of the federal grants, like through Title I or through, the federal grants that we have to deal with, migrant and that sort of thing. So, Karen, do you have any other info for Jay on that?
No, I'm thinking it's going to be close to double what we have already received. So, I believe we received about $120,000 altogether from the state. And preliminary conversations are talking about how we might be able to use those funds next year to help with our staffing, because we really just don't know if we're going to be in the same situation with needing smaller class sizes or what type of support we're going to need. So that's the unfortunate thing with all the unknowns, is it's hard to plan.
Thank you.
Mrs. Meg, I have a quick question, and it's probably somewhat self-explanatory, but for the decrease in enrollment, are many of those kids ones that we anticipate returning to the school district if and when COVID sort of becomes more manageable, or is that like an accurate decrease that will change our projections for next year's enrollment?
That's a great question. We actually just had that conversation with an admin conversation this morning, that trying to maybe do some outreach that way to families, just finding out, you know, almost like a little survey to see where people are kind of midway through this, how it's going, what people's thoughts and concerns are about looking at next year, what would be things that they, you know, because there were different reasons why people, you know, made different decisions this year. And some of it was just so much unknown. Some of it was the protocols. Some of it was concern in general about large groups of people in a setting. You know, so I mean, it kind of was the whole gamut of people's concerns. So, we just had that conversation. I don't know if people will be able to give us, a specific answer today, either. That's what we just talked about. They might not be ready to make that statement. They might feel differently after maybe the vaccinations roll out a little more. They might feel differently during the summer. I mean, it's just, yeah. So it's a great question. We just had the same one.
Can I just chime in a little bit more on that too? We really don't know the longer term impacts. I mean, I actually probably think it's going to take 3 years to recover, to get our students back and to be back at where we were prior to COVID. But there's other impacts that our student enrollment numbers do affect. Pupil transportation is one of them. The other one is our ESSA grants from the state, because they are student enrollment driven. So those federal funds are based on enrollment numbers. So planning conservatively.
Yeah.
It's interesting that first grade, there's a 10 count difference. You know, most are 3 to 7, mm-hmm. which I could see that. It's just kind of interesting to see where that. Do we have any idea what incoming, or is that just another
We have done that one. We have reached out on that just to get kind of numbers. We don't necessarily know what that means as far as actually like when, you know, kind of seats in the building, but a little over 30, not as big as some of our others. So.
Mm-hmm. And about what we're losing with seniors then. We're 27 right now,
is
right?
Is it 27, 28, our senior class this year? 20.
That's what it says. Eight, on here, 27.
Maybe 20. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So that's the same. Yeah, I was thinking the other small classes.
Some bigger ones in the middle.
Yeah, second grade's only 27.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Eighth grade, 46. That seems big comparatively. Yes. It really
is
not.
A big one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're right. One. After, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, you're right. We haven't had this low since 2011.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so good question.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other comments or questions? Thank you, Karen, very much. Once again, a very thorough explanation that makes it easy to understand, too. Okay. Motion has been made and seconded for the 2021 fiscal year budget revision. Mara, can you please call the roll?
Yes. Katie Holmland?
Yes.
Meg Lister?
Yes.
Cheryl File?
Yes.
Jay Lister?
Yes.
Sarah Holmgren?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Next, we'll move on to 14.5, discussion the school calendar for next school year. Not this school year, but the 2021 to 2022. superintendent seeking feedback from the board for the development of the calendar year for next school year, starting in September. Already, but I know we got to get started on it.
Exactly. And
kind of a guessing game.
A little bit of that too. So I think there was some good discussion that I think came out of the conversation in December. I think you guys had received a little bit of other feedback from people as well. Still some concern I know from you guys about, you know, kind of that mid-year shift for even looking at this year. Mm-hmm. But I think there were some thoughts that came out during that you guys were interested maybe in us exploring a little further, potentially, like thinking about talking about spring break, talking about some of the other potential for having smaller breaks within the school year, looking at different activities and what that might have an impact. Also looking at some of the things that have worked really well during all of this craziness, like there were some things that have come out of some of the schedules even last spring, looking at things that happen on Fridays and even some of the time constraints within that and opportunities for professional development for teachers, as well as some individual time with students outside the school day that kind of have become added benefits a bit. So this is in the very beginning stages, but there's no So for the listening world out there, these are not like drafts to vote on. This is us putting together a few parameters and some things that have been discussed in the past, but just getting some feedback from you about some direction you might want to, you know, just give us within this, or if you have some thoughts about it. So in the past, we've also talked a little bit about even 4-day weeks and what that might look like. We've talked about number of minutes that the state, you know, requires for certain grade levels, fourth and up, you know, 900 minutes per year, and K through three is 740, I think is what it is, a little over 700. The commissioner has been pretty open to different districts doing some different things with that. That doesn't always just have to be about the day. It can be, you know, there's flexibility within that. There are ways to work with that. There's some advantages and disadvantages to maybe having a few longer days, but having a little more focus time on others. So there's lots of ways that districts do this, and there's some flexibility there. And that's the name of the game right now, with everything that we're doing within COVID and just life. So so with that all said, these are very rough drafts designed to get some conversation with you guys going. So for people out there, don't think, oh my gosh, they've already done this, it's done, there's drafts, and I've got something to vote on, and what just happened? That's not at all where we are. So just there's some parameters. Okay. So with that being said, we have gone in and just started to look through what this might look like, penciling in the required number of minimum days and that sort of thing, looking at dates around Labor Day, Memorial Day, looking at Thanksgiving, Christmas, those kinds of things.
It'll be on Monday.
Yeah.
We're all still trying to wake up and they're kind of grumpy. That's so.
I know. So this first one, that just for the sake of discussion, and Mara has bringing you some pretty copies. Just to look at if you want to mark on them or write on them or, you know, anything like that.
Oh,
okay. Feel free.
Okay. Oh, yeah. The wrong one.
No, we're bringing you all three.
All of them.
Oh, all three.
Just go in order.
We should put them in different color.
Okay.
Well,
hold on top.
What are we looking at? 4 days.
But these are drafts. Not even drafts.
Yeah.
These are places.
Looking at traditional.
These are
examples.
So look at the one that says traditional up at the top. That's okay. The first one we're looking at. Just for your own eyes, if you want. So this is just sort of that basic, what does it look like within, you know, fitting the correct number of days within there, having a 2-week Christmas break, a 1-week traditional spring break, students starting August 24th, ending before Memorial Day, having one shortened day a week, and that is not new. Again, this is more of that traditional thing, but we have talked about some of the benefits that have come out of that 8-to-noon model that the middle and high school have used this year,
mm-hmm.
as far as ways to capture some support time for students outside the day, potentially some other intervention time for kids, small group instruction, Yes. So that's been a real benefit. This district has had that Friday be the day for ever. I mean, this is my 19th year here. So it's been Friday. So one of the things that we've talked about is maybe a potential looking at some different days. Again, advantages, disadvantages. Thinking, does it always have to be a Friday? Sometimes those afternoons are exhausting. Kids are done, teachers are done. Sometimes maybe that's not the best day for that type of thing in the sense of even intervention time or supports or trying to do professional development. Maybe it's a Monday. Districts do that, you know, so maybe you have a shorter day on a Monday, more of that 8 to noon, and then sort of that traditional quote unquote time for the remainder of the week. Some people break up and do Wednesday with an early day. You know, some of the reasons for it being on a Friday years ago were because we used to have ferries in this world and mm-hmm. we don't. So, you know, I mean, so mm-hmm. travel is so different now. There were a lot of reasons why that was there, and it's just not necessarily the case anymore. It just isn't the case anymore. What, we have two a month now?
I don't think we get one. Or one. Month, do we? Or
yeah, so travel has crazy. Certainly changed. So just, you know, just things to consider. This definitely meets state statute for instructional minutes. And then the little asterisk there that you saw just would say the times might be adjusted, you know, based on, I mean, busing. These are not exact things. This is just a kind of a point of starting. So that's pretty much, that's very similar to what we already do. What we're used to seeing. Mm-hmm. Thoughts there?
Okay.
Yeah. And it's nice for you to be able to look at them even mm-hmm. together if you want. So this next one is looking at more of the modified spring schedule here. And really the basic difference here is not having one solid week of spring vacation potentially. This is very similar to the first one you just saw. With the modified, it's called modified.
Well, it's called 4 day.
Is it the 4 day or the 4 day? We have it like this. 4 day and then the two mini spring breaks.
It's called mini spring break.
Okay. I'm sorry, this one is modified. You guys have mini spring breaks.
Confusing.
Hey, this is Meg. Can you hear me okay? Just to clarify, since I'm just looking at the screen, you all are looking at the modified spring that has the mini spring vacation in it, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it. Perfect.
Perfect.
Again, this one is very similar to the first, the start date August 24th, ending before Memorial, one shortened day a week, still meeting the state statute for instructional time. Again, looking at maybe one of those days being different, not always a Friday. And then the mini breaks are, one of them would be in March, you can see there, and then one is near Easter. And again, those don't have, they wouldn't have to stay exactly where those are.
About a month apart from each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's probably around state basketball in March, I think. The 17th, 18th would probably be during the week of that. So again, those could be flexed. That's not, those things aren't, that's not set in stone. Who knows with all that too next year. But there's been more interest in that than there's been in the past. I mean, there's people who feel strongly both ways, but there's people who will always feel strongly both ways on calendars do.
The thing about calendars is that you can have it one year and then it didn't work out, you can change it back.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And I'll say, in what we lived in Washington, this is, they had one in, they'd have a break in February and April, a week.
Yes, they do.
But they also got out of school later into the summer. But it was interesting to have mm-hmm. 2 weeks still at Christmas, but by the end of February, you had another week off. And then by April, you had another week off. And then you were done mid-June. It was kind of,
mm-hmm.
actually, I kind of liked it.
Different ways of doing that.
But
what's the advantage of having two full weeks after Christmas? I mean, it almost seems like the kids are bored by the end of
probably.
2 weeks. But, you know, then you have a long slog of January through until spring break with mm-hmm. nothing really.
Yeah.
But I know at least my kids are bored by the.
Exactly. And again, like you say, I think in years past, it was also a time where a lot of people potentially traveled, mm-hmm. but a lot of people don't travel over Christmas now, not even on COVID years, but just because of the cost.
Yeah.
So that has been a change, I would say, in the last 5 to 10 years that's different. You know, in other places, you can get in your car and drive or whatever. You know, there's different ways to do that. But a lot of times here, it's extremely expensive to go during those exact times. Mm-hmm. So, but the flip side that you'll hear, of course, that if people do go, that's their time that they can go with family. You know, it's an argument either way on all of them, always.
So this one, this is a 4-day school week. Is that correct?
This one has a still with a shorter day on some day, like an 8 to noon day. This is not a 4-day week.
Tuesday to Thursday.
And then the Monday is 8 to noon.
But that's still 4 days.
No Friday.
There's no Friday.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. That should say Friday.
Okay.
That should say Friday.
I'm just making sure.
Good job, Cheryl. You're right. Okay. That's a 3.5-day week. Look at that.
I don't think we would be in compliance.
That will not meet the state statute for instructional time. Okay. I can tell you that. That's funny. Good job, Cheryl.
No, yes, that would still be a 5-day week.
That would be. Thank you. I was like, wait, what about the month?
I think it's hard during Christmas to make that break shorter because of Christmas and New Year being exactly a week apart. It's like, where would you break up if you were going to make it shorter? But just in reference to Jay's question, but for what it's worth, basically a 5-day weekend in March and then another 4-day weekend in April. And there's a 4-day weekend because of in-service in February, right?
Yes.
Well, that, I mean, that's those so are some...
Nice.
Really nice breaks, nice, good breaks. That to me, that would feel like more of a break than just a spring break for what it's worth. I like that.
Okay. I think did Bridget make a comment in there about testing?
Bridget, yes, made a comment about this in service in particular, in the April.
Yeah.
Testing windows open the first 2 weeks of April, so this vacation day would affect it slightly.
Yeah.
If you were to, you know, if the district were to actually keep those as vacation days. But like we said, that's only chosen because that's Easter weekend. So it was like, oh, why not put a vacation over Easter weekend during that month? So that's the reason why it's there. It could be a different weekend if needed.
Yeah.
Oh, like the very next one or something.
Yeah, or move the it to the 19th or something too. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, do the Monday, Tuesday, and so the Friday.
Can I ask a question real quick? This is Katie. So for this 8 to noon day, is your intention still to keep staff in the building then?
And yeah.
Okay. Because I'm just thinking it would be so nice to have it on Fridays, assuming we ever get decent weather again. Being out at noon would allow families to like jump in their own boats and get out camping or hunting or whatever earlier, which is nice. It's kind of, this doesn't add anything to our weekend right now if it's on Monday, because we still have to get up on Monday morning, which I understand normal people with normal jobs do anyway, but a Monday afternoon off is like, it's not really an afternoon off for families or kids, you know, but that's just my initial thought as I'm processing this whole thing is I would love to have it on a Friday, even though I'll be working either way, I guess. So I'll never be able to take advantage of this, but I feel like other families would really appreciate being able to utilize that afternoon, even if it's not every week, but occasionally being able to take, you know, that almost a three-day weekend and get out of town a little early if the sun ever comes back.
Mm-hmm. And that's the reason that it's also been on that Friday too, is that it can be better for families and stuff. It's not great, you know, it's not as great for doing some of those interventions in the afternoon of professional development in that sense. But that is the reason. That is the reason why it often ends up on the Friday. It's just for what Katie's saying. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Any other thoughts on that one? Or?
I know a lot of people like to travel on spring break, so that'd be the one disadvantage to...
To minis?
A lot of the minis. It's like Christmas is really expensive to travel. And those minis are hard to get out of town and be back in time for.
You know, it's been an interesting thing to watch that too, though. Over the years, because what ends up happening too around the spring break, because it is often around basketball, at least in the state, we see not as many people doing that same travel over spring break. They all also, not to be whatever, but they just pick the weeks that work better for them. They don't necessarily take them over that. It's been actually the people who often get negatively impacted by it are teachers again, staff. By shortening those up, they're the ones that technically aren't always able to take like a longer, you know, sort of trip like that. We have not seen as much travel over spring break, the actual break. I think you do. I do sometimes. You and I do. Sometimes we're on the same plane because it's the week. But
does the basketball tournament usually take that whole week?
It
out that whole week, right?
Yeah.
Just depending on travel and what the ferry does. Yeah. Usually we start Wednesday morning at 8 in the morning typically, but that will change with the classification talks that's coming out through the pipeline.
So the kids usually leave like Monday or Tuesday.
Usually leave Monday. Yeah.
So they're gone that whole week anyway.
Pretty much. Yeah.
School's kind of shut down. The high school is
music
for that week.
It's about half the kids.
Yeah.
And is it music festival that?
And that's often sometimes that's where some of these other dates sometimes come in too, is we try to put those over.
April.
Yeah, that's why that date I think as well.
Wednesday through a Sunday, and then our test is late April, which is usually a Thursday through a Sunday.
So sometimes that's why there's been in-service days or things around those two, because again, Art Fest doesn't usually take as many kids, but Music Fest takes a lot.
Typically, historically, it takes the highest number.
Yeah, because she takes a pretty good chunk. So, yeah. Yeah. So, anyway.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no, it's good. And you're right about the Christmas one. We've actually had some different configurations of that before, too. Like Meg was saying, sometimes there are some years where it is later. Like
and
even, actually, even this year might have been like, you know, like where the 24th was on like a,
yeah,
where, was it a Friday?
Thursday, Wednesday?
The technical holidays this year will be on Saturday.
So then you observe it on Friday.
But we observe it on the previous
week. Right. So it's like, you know, this almost could be, but then you end up a little bit with like a 3-day week or, you know, it kind of.
Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, we got out on the 27th.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It was just the Friday, and then it was Christmas Eve was like Sunday or something, and it was.
And that's the year you probably could have gotten away with.
It was discussed
seven
that year.
School days or whatever.
It was. That was a year that actually they ended up on both the weekends. You could have left on, you know, had get out on a Friday, have a week, and then like new. It was like you would go come back on the. Yeah, it was really tight, you know, but.
I don't know. My push is just to have Christmas last Friday of the year or third Friday of December every year, like Thanksgiving. It's a nice long weekend.
Just
forget the date. We're going to go with the time. Like Thanksgiving. Third Thursday of December.
I love it. Like the
third
year that
Thursday
they changed.
Of December.
Halloween here one year, right?
It'd be great. Yes,
I
Halloween could be that. The last
I heard about
Friday
that.
of October.
Changed it one year. Trick-or-treating, sorry.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, well before my time, but I still hear about it. It's pretty funny. Okay, well that's a good, but that's, let me see, I have that note. And then the last one is, this is a 4-day week schedule, and this has been discussed, in past years, with varying interests, some people very interested, some people not at all. We do have a few districts in the state that do this here. It's more common in other states, but Southeast Island, for example, school district has been doing it for quite a few years. You have to look at your minutes. You look at your minutes more in this type of a schedule than exactly the days.
Your days
so
are
you
longer.
Have to look at some of your times on those days. Your days would be longer. But there's some conversations that a lot of districts do a lot of things on those Fridays too. They have, you know, intervention groups. Sometimes they do like STEM and STEAM activities for kids. Potentially here, there could be other, there could be activities that are going on. You have a longer chunk of time. You could work with your local groups, your swim clubs and your dance groups and all those things too. Could be travel, could be if activities ever come back to something. So So there are some different advantages to that too. We know there are disadvantages to it with a little longer day like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one does have a traditional Thanksgiving and Christmas break, sort of that 3 day and the 2 week. This one does have a shorter spring vacation, thinking about that. Ending again before Memorial, and so same, they all have the same start and end on this. So, and as I always say, the way you can end up, you know, you can have another week, you can have another 3 days, you can do a lot, we can do a lot of things. Your vacation days can be, I mean, you can make a calendar really as long as you want it to be. Spread out your, I mean,
as long as it starts after July 1st.
Yeah, exactly. So within reason there, you know, so you can, if you wanted another break or wanted a spring break,
is that a national rule or is that a state? Because you see school starting, oh my gosh, in some areas of the country, like the second week of August.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. Or the beginning of August.
A lot of Alaska does that, actually.
What's that?
A lot of Alaska starts early in August. I think most of Matsu starts second week, or if not sooner.
Yeah.
Your Anchorage district start by the 15th usually in August.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But they have worse weather in August.
Erica, it's showing the in-service day in October, the 29th, and I know you guys have always tried to make it after Halloween, but does it run into other issues if you, oh wait, never mind, there it is, vacation day on the 1st, okay, disregard. I'm with you.
Yeah, and again, none of these things, I mean, none of this is all like set, I mean, there's some attempt to look at some of the things that people have talked about over the years, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's around an Easter or looking at basketball or thinking about some of those things, you know, there's the academic and instructional needs. And then, you know, then there are life needs, and we know that also plays in. So we're, you know, you try to look at the big picture, of all of that.
Have you ever surveyed parents to see what their opinion on a 4 day week would be?
We've not officially done that. No, we have not officially put that out as like a survey about it. And we could do that. I mean, it's that would be a big shift, bigger than I think a spring break or a longer, you know, mm-hmm. And I think if we did do that, absolutely. And I think, talking with people in, like, I'm just using Southeast Island, but there's lots of other districts. My old district in Idaho started doing it about 16 years ago and doing the 4 day weeks, and they still do. But Southeast Island, what they did was that very first year, because there were a lot of concerns. Sometimes there's childcare concerns. There was some concern initially about even whether if it's that longer day, what does that really look like? And is that too long? And, you know, for younger kids and that kind of thing. And so they offered some different options for some things, even on a Friday, within the school setting, which I think we would also do, whether it's for kids or for families, maybe even recommending and you know, providing some, whether it's supports, interventions, or even just some exploratory type options for kids. Most districts, if we've had teachers or, you know, we've had a couple who have worked for us, even who have worked in districts that were 4 day, and they would not go back. They loved it, you know, and families did too. But it's a shift. It's a big shift. It's a different change. We'd need to work with local groups, local agencies. You'd need to work with families and parents. So that would be definitely a bigger one that I think we would want to have more involvement, more thoughts from other groups and, you know, organizations and that sort of thing. Yeah.
So staff be. Work on Fridays, or
yes,
yeah. I'd be curious to know, in a normal year, with maybe we'll never know what a normal year is again, but a year where middle and high school in particular are traveling for activities again, would this help them be in class more? A 4 day week,
yeah,
it would depend. With the Ring Central, some of our kids have been calling into class before COVID hit. You know, on their downtime, they would be calling in, and Mr. Troutman was a guru at this, that they would be, before their game or something started, they would be in the commons of the school attending science class or chemistry class before COVID hit. But it would help us not miss as many days on those Fridays, because typically you would leave on a Friday morning. But yeah, all depending on what COVID did, but it would help. And especially if we were hosting, we'd have less disruption within the building too, if we were hosting something big.
You could move all your in-service days to Fridays as well.
That's where they'd be. Yep, exactly. So then that would just be the way the week is. You know, there'd just be that sort of schedule.
And on that calendar, and there's still in-service days, right? Like Mondays and Tuesdays.
Yes, and you could adjust. I mean, again, you could adjust any of those. You could move, have it be where it is every Friday is like that. This one is actually moved. I think these are actually not every single Friday. This is like, you see there's some Fridays that do. And so, but I think if you know, there's a...
The idea behind that was maybe the first Friday of every month, students come to school, mm-hmm. and then they, you know, kind of get their idea for what they're going to do for the rest of the Fridays for the month. You know, if they were going to be a student that actually came for like an exploratory, mm-hmm. or if they were going to, if we were going to partner with Parks and Rec for some activities throughout that Friday that are school but not school, mm-hmm. type of thing. So
yeah, I could coordinate some things on that too. So. Different options there maybe for partnering. Some of the advantages that people have talked about that have taught in them in a 4-day, even though that day seems like, oh, 8 to 3:30, oh my gosh. But what they talk about too is there, you know, some of the, you get rid of some of the you know, every day has those transitions. And sometimes you have a day and it's a little longer, but it's, you know, you're sort of like, it's kind of like the condensed schedule that we've had. I mean, it's sort of similar to the high school, right? Like you're doing that thing. It's a little bit, it's intense, but then, you know, you're done and you may have 3 days, and maybe it's 3 days that you're taking a 3-day weekend with your family, or they're coming in and they're getting some other support. There can be some flexibility. There can be other activities on those days. They could put dance classes on a Friday. You could put an extra swim lesson on a Friday. I mean, you could coordinate with other
school 8 to 3 at some point anyway. I mean, yeah. I that's my recollection was that we went to school from
right back in the old days.
Another half an hour than what I remember, but we also had 8 periods, and I don't remember what we did in grade school, but
yeah,
I think it was similar.
So anyway,
so what would the 8 a.m. to 3:30. So that's an extra hour.
It's really dark when they got home.
Would we have all classes every day? Or would you have more of a block schedule like we had last year? I'm not talking about this year, but as previous years.
Could be a little longer, but maybe not so much of the condensed. Could be long. Could potentially be some longer blocks within that, but maybe spread longer of the year. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have a question on this one as well. With thinking about like the elementary school, what would our kindergarten hours be then? Because I know due to COVID, kindergarten is being released at the same time. Obviously, they wouldn't be going to 3:30. So what would their hours, what would the kindergarten hours be like?
Heather and I were actually just briefly brainstorming about that too. And I think you're right. I don't think they would go a full day like that. So we had talked about even some potential intervention with some of the kindergarten teachers. Maybe they're helping out with some of the other things in the afternoon, like they've done in the past with even like a callback or intervention group in support for other students, not just kindergarten, and then working with maybe like even some of our local, again, childcare, dance groups, Parks and Rec, that kind of thing. To offset those.
That may also apply if we move forward with the preschool program.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's exactly right. So just some thought. I mean, you know, this is one of those things that it's you know, initially I think it's like, oh, you know, kind of, but it's out there. I mean, I think, and I do think there's really is some validity in talking through it. So I think this would be one for sure that we'd want to get some more feedback and thoughts from other people out there in the rest of the world, in our community, and that sort of thing. So,
when do kids most usually practice for sports? What time do they usually start for that?
The earliest that we can start typically is not till 3:45 because that's when teacher contracts are. And then usually we have help from 3 to 3:45 that the kids would use as kind of extra time to go visit your teachers. Mm-hmm. So this is, I mean, they could go 15 minutes afterwards, you know, just go 3:45. That's the teacher contract time. So typically we don't start before that. The only time we would start earlier than 3:45 is with our middle school program, so we don't have our middle school kids roaming around lost for 45 minutes, we would start them as early as 3:30.
Also,
our teachers are on contract till 3:45, so a lot of our coaches that are teachers, they won't get there till 4. We won't start till 4.
Except non-school, like dance and swim.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, they'll start as soon as kids are done with school. Yeah, yeah.
Just there. And again, go ahead. Sorry, Meg.
I was just going to say, I would be curious to hear, like, to maybe put something together and just start getting an idea from parents and, I don't know, see what their knee-jerk reaction is. If people are like, no way, I already can tell that that would be a disaster for my family, or, hey, you know, that might really work for our family. It'd be interesting to hear so we knew if there was, like, a really strong feelings and a big majority one way or the other that would tell us whether we should even continue discussions. But it's an interesting idea, and a lot of Oregon does it, which is where we're from, and so we've had a lot of friends and family that do it.
Yeah.
I have this is Cheryl question. So where'd you get the 8 a.m. start time?
Just looking at, yeah.
Like, Tider doesn't start till 9 and goes till 4:30 at Southeast Island School. So
I'm just curious.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's no, like I said, there's no.
We used to start at 8, but 8:15 and then it was 8:20. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So both schools did start in a schedule very similar to this year. So parents.
You're right.
Kind of get a feel for what that did look like in the yellow schedule in the middle and high school. It was a 4-day. Fridays was off.
Yeah.
And the same.
And last spring too.
The same was in the middle in the elementary school for a little bit until they opened up their
classes. Yeah.
So yeah. Parents do have some familiarity with a Friday being completely off.
Yep. The first month was like that this year for all elementary for sure. That was the schedule we ran. I know, doesn't it? There are so many things that seem so long ago. I know.
Well, and I think for some of us, we're just so relieved we could send them to school.
I know.
But I'll take 4 days.
But I do, and just sort of anecdotal conversations that I've had with people over the years, and even during all this, that, you know, there's, I mean, again, with everybody, there's positive, there's negative, there's advantages, there's disadvantages.
I'm kind of curious on the academic side, if there's any studies that have been done about the school day. I mean, I know when we looked at the flipping of, do they go eat lunch before or after recess, there were several, I mean, there was a lot of discussion about it, but there was also a lot of studies that just showed and examples of kids eating more and not wasting as much food, but also being able to concentrate when they ate after they had been at recess versus before they would throw their food and they just wanted to get outside, at least on that elementary side. So it'd be kind of, maybe it's not. Maybe it doesn't matter whether you have a 5-day or 4-day.
There are varying research studies out there about it. Bless you. And it's kind of like the survey that you did with the kids. You know, I mean, there's research that supports that academically, there's not necessarily a lot of loss. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's roughly the same. For some kids, it's better. For some kids, it's worse. You know, I'll have to dredge up all my research that I had done a couple of years ago and get some.
Maybe if it becomes more of a serious conversation, if it's looking like people really want to seriously
people
consider
have
it,
asked,
then that's
people
the
asked
question.
About it. When we did really, you know, we kind of drove down this road a little bit a couple of years ago and did, you know, quite a bit of work around. I had some conversations, talked a lot with staff, had some feedback from from some families and you know, parents, just to see what their thoughts were. And
I didn't get that.
Sorry, my watch is talking.
Your watch is talking.
And probably just even in the business world where a lot of people work 4-10, yeah. You know, it's a similar
mm-hmm.
model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I know the teachers and staff, maybe some staff would be still working on Fridays, but mm-hmm. maybe it would be still different.
Yeah. And there'd be things to figure out with some of that too, because even there's things with hours and minutes and things with teachers and what does that look like? And
mm-hmm.
we'd have to think some of those things through too, just instructionally. And is it every Friday? I think in some districts you figure out, because if they're teaching almost literally bell to bell, then there are some changes to that. Like in Idaho, I think where my old district, I think theirs has worked out. It's again a minutes thing to even every other Friday, or maybe it's three Fridays a month, or it's something you have to look at that too. You have mm-hmm. to look at that with teachers too in their time.
I think that'd be so confusing every other week or whatever.
For teachers, yeah. But for kids, the kids are off every Friday. I mean, the kids' schedule stays the same, but there were some you'd have to look at some of those things.
Oh, how the teachers, whether they're off
yeah.
or whether they're
how much their contract is too, because they are teaching bell to bell, literally.
Oh.
There's not that, like, half hour before with kids, or, you know, it changes.
That would concern me, too, just because of some of the feedback we've gotten this year with,
yeah.
you know, especially K through fifth grade, where
mm-hmm.
they are bell to bell.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
With very little downtime.
Yeah, exactly.
Where I think there's a little bit more downtime in the secondary, middle school and secondary.
Well, and hopefully with something like this, though, too, you would have your sort of maybe your regular swim and PE, thinking about elementary.
Oh,
you know,
so
you would, yeah.
Right.
Mostly just thinking like the actual teacher instructional time,
oh, okay.
just per day, like what are they on, when are they on,
yeah.
you know, that whole thing. So you'd have to look at that, too. Kind of like the same thing with minutes here. It might not always all be days. Maybe it's teachers every other Friday working
mm-hmm.
their regular, you know, Friday. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, we'd have, there'd be lots of stuff to figure out. But, you know, it's out there in the world,
okay.
so we don't want to not say it. We like, and we do have people who are interested in it.
Okay. Well, they will mull it over, keep it on the agenda for next month.
I think we'd like to try to bring something to you in
oh.
February. I think what we probably would do is if we're looking at something that might be this, you know, much of a change, I think we definitely would want to have more feedback from parents and community. We would want to, you know, potentially maybe it's even getting a bit more of a committee approach to it in that
mm-hmm.
sense, and maybe having a few parents that might be interested. Maybe we want to have, maybe a board member wants to be, you know, part of that conversation or not. I mean, you know, it's, that'd be a thought too. Because it'd be a bigger change. That's a bigger change.
Should the next step be then is literally these are examples and let's start the illustrious polling, but
mm-hmm.
poll staff as well as the community. It
mm-hmm.
goes in the bulletins, open it up for 2 weeks or whatever,
mm-hmm.
a week, I don't know, whatever, and see how much feedback we get.
Yep, thinking about some of that.
Mm-hmm.
Just initial thoughts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else have any comments or suggestions? Okay, and we'll move on to additional comments from board members. Future agenda items, I think we've got the calendar.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was it, right? Okay, other new business? Okay, hearing none, I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Cheryl seconded. We'll call Mara, please.
Meg Lipster?
Yes.
Kay Holmland?
Yes.
Sarah Mulgrain?
Yes.
Cheryl File?
Yes.
Jay Lipster?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0. Have a good evening, everybody.